That's right. We're so...
The Henry Morgan Show. Yes, the Henry Morgan Show with Arnold Stang, Bert Kelton, Art Carney, Milton Kadem from the orchestra, and the Billy Williams Quartet, and me, Ed Herlihy. And here is the star of the Henry Morgan Show, standing on his favorite corner in front of the cigar store.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan.
Let's see. That was page one. That was page two. Thank you. This is a dreamy type of a program. Do you know how to interpret dreams? Very important. I was looking through a book. It has a list of the things you dream about and what they mean. Very important. For instance, it says here on page 13, if you dream that you fell out of bed, it means trouble with your boss or trouble with your landlord or that your wife was hogging the bed. Now suppose, on the other hand, that you dream that... Suppose you dream you're shopping in Saks Fifth Avenue with no clothes on. Wake up immediately because you can get arrested. You cannot shop at Saks Fifth Avenue without money. Unless, of course, you have a charge account. Of course, if you're rich enough to afford a charge account, why, don't worry. Nobody at Saks will bother you. Suppose you dream that you're cleaning a chicken. Now, this means that people will notice you. They'll say, hey, look at Sam. He's cleaning the chicken. Baldness. If you dream you're going bald, it means you'll get bad news. Probably from your barber. If you dream about your barber and he's bald-headed, it means you should change barbers. If you dream about your barber's wife and she's bald-headed, she should change barbers. This brings up suffocation. If you dream about being suffocated by a hot towel, it means that the barber has already warned you about dreaming about his wife. Now, if you dream that you're a floor walker who's running, it means you're trying to break up the crowd that's watching your barber's wife in Saks Fifth Avenue cleaning a bald-headed chicken with no clothes on. I don't think you believe much of this. As a matter of fact, I don't myself. But if... Oh, here comes Gerard, my dream boy. Hello, Gerard.
Hiya.
Boy, you just took me out of a mess, but what's the matter? You look mad about something.
I am. Some dopey census taker came to my apartment to count me. It took a half an hour.
Yeah, well, what about it?
How long does it take to count one?
Well, of course, they take a little time. Why should that make you so angry?
Like I was taking a shower.
Oh, I see.
He keeps asking me if I'm married, if I'm working, if I got a refrigerator.
Yeah?
And the whole time, I'm dripping all over the floor.
Well, you know, you could have asked him to wait while you dried yourself.
I didn't want to dry myself.
Why not?
I wasn't finished with my shower.
Yeah, but why should it take a half hour to ask? What did they ask?
Well, he asked lots of things. Like, he asked me my income last year.
Dead, huh?
Yeah. I told him I made $350,000.
What's the matter with you, Gerard? You don't make anything like that.
Who's to know?
Well, what's the point of telling him that?
Heck, I was standing there dripping with nothing on but a wet towel. I looked so shabby. I wanted to make a good impression.
Well, what did the census taker say when you gave him that fabulous income?
Nothing. He just looked at me and bust out laughing.
He laughed.
Yeah, the towel said YMCA.
Actually, of course, he couldn't have believed you. Your place, where you live, doesn't look like a wealthy man's apartment.
Yeah, well, I told him I only use it to take showers in.
Well, then he must have asked you where you actually live.
Yeah. So I told him I had a suite at the Waldorf, a winter place in Palm Beach, a hunting lodge up in Maine, and a lockup in Coney Island.
Gerard, you're balling up the statistics.
Whereas you should be grateful that your government has that much interest in you.
Of course they're interested in me.
Of course.
Sure. They think I got a house in Palm Beach, a lodge in Maine, a suite in a hotel, a locker in Coney Island, and a room in the Bronx where I go to take showers.
Well, you shouldn't have told him those stories, Gerard. You spoiled all his records.
Yeah, I know I did.
That false information.
No, not that way.
Well, then how then?
I dripped all over his book.
I see. Well, see you around.
Bye.
Well, I better get over to the studio and count the people. Might be there's an audience there. Taxi! Hey, taxi! Good evening, anybody. We come now to that portion of the program where we present our featured athlete of the week. Our choice this week for the outstanding man in his sport is that celebrated long-distance swimmer, Buster Kearney. And here he is, Buster Kearney. Buster, is it true that you hold more records than any other long-distance swimmer today?
That's right, Mr. Morgan.
What'd you say?
That's right, Mr. Morgan.
Tell us, Buster, how do you go into training for a long-distance swim?
Oh, like you live careful. No smoking, no drinking, no dames. Just watch yourself and don't do nothing. You know. The regularity makes you lose your butt.
I see. Well, Buster, what is the longest distance that you've ever had to swim?
It's pretty tough.
What?
No smoking, no drinking, and no dames.
Well, I imagine it is, yes. But
especially the dames.
Oh, that, yes, well, of course.
You know any dames?
Well, Buster, I thought you avoided them.
I ain't training now.
Oh. Well, now, Buster, I understand that most of your long-distance swimming has been done in a swimming pool. How come you've never attempted to swim the English Channel?
It's over my head.
Yes? Yes? It gets deep. Buster, how did you get to be the expert swimmer you are?
Well, like I trained and trained. And one day, lo and behold.
What did you say?
That's just an expression.
I know, yeah.
I always think of expressions.
That's good. Right?
Sometimes I write on my wall.
One other thing, Buster. Most long-distance swimmers cover themselves with a heavy coat of grease. Is that to keep you warm?
That ain't why I do it.
Well, why do you do it?
I like the taste.
It's interesting. Now, when you swim for miles at a time, and you're out there swimming and you can't do any talking, just what do you think about?
Dame.
That's so, really?
Yeah, you know any dames?
Few. Now, Buster, could you describe to our listeners your favorite stroke?
Yes. I use a four-beat kick, an overhand crawl, and I take a breath every 8 strokes, like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's the Australian creep.
Australian creep. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
It was invented by some creep from Australia.
I see. Well, I think...
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Buster. Yeah, well, I get the idea, Buster. Buster, that's all, Buster.
Oh.
Right. Thanks for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to say before you go?
Yeah. You know any dames?
Yes, and good night to you, Buster Kearney. The Billy Williams Quartet now rises to yearn a little about a place they've never seen, the Red River Valley.
Come this valley they say you are going. I will miss your bright eyes and sweet smile. For they say you are taking the sunshine that has brightened my pathway for a while. Just listen a while ere you leave me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu. Just remember the red river valley and the boy who has loved you so true.
Just listen a while ere you leave me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu. Just remember the red river valley and the boy who has loved you so true.
Take it.
How lonely, how sad it will be.
Thanks.
Oh, remember the fond heart you're breaking.
And the grief you are causing me to see. Just stay still a while and you leave me. And do not hasten to bid me adieu. Just remember the Red River Valley. And the boy who is the so true. Then go to your home by the ocean. Think how sad and lonely it will be. Close your door and go 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 and go.
And do not hasten to bid me adieu. Just remember the Red River Valley and the boy who was the
to take it again. Just continue to
remember the Red River Valley and the boy who was the
Do you know what part of this program that we've been neglecting?
The funny part?
Well, yeah, but Ed, that's because we're saving ourselves for slumber. But what we've been overlooking is the educational part, Ed. You know, the personal information, stuff like that. Would you introduce me to anybody?
Oh, glad to, Henry.
Ladies and gentlemen, the question man.
Good evening.
Our first question comes from a Mr. J.L. of Scranton. He wants to know, in the name Harry S. Truman, what does the S stand for?
The S stands for his middle name.
Miss W.S. of Springfield writes, when going to an informal dinner party, can you wear an off-the-shoulder peach organdy gown?
Yes. I suppose I could.
Mr. H.B. of New York asks, in what year and by whom was gunpowder invented?
Gunpowder will be invented by Pravda next year.
Mr. LBK of Milwaukee inquires, what is the meaning of the phrase congressional immunity?
Congressional immunity means that it is illegal for one congressman to catch a disease from another congressman.
Mr. LBK of Milwaukee continues, in that case, what is the meaning of the phrase congressional privilege?
Congressional privilege means that one congressman has the right to catch a disease from another.
Here's a question from a foreign listener. A Mr. B.L. of Bulgaria writes, Lipova Drabanyani Piatra Targo Orosoti Lugo Dragasani?
No. Pee Wee Reese plays shortstop for the Brooklyn.
Miss J.L. of Denver wants to know, can you give me an illustration of a communist front?
A communist front would be Stalin's stomach.
Finally, a Mr. H.B. of Nashville inquires, what is the meaning of the expression, dead earnest?
The meaning is, we all have to go sometime, even earnest.
This is the game of the question, and brought to you as a public service. Here is one more question. Mr. V.S. of Switzerland wants to know,
What would it sound like if Bernie Green arranged the William Tell Overture and Milton Cadams played it?
I don't know. Let's listen and find out.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are fortunate this evening in having a direct line to the British Broadcasting Company, and since it's midnight in Great Britain right now, we're just in time to hear England's most famous disc jockey, Googie Morgan. And here he is, England's jolly, happy-go-lucky, disc-spinning all-night funster, Googie Morgan.
Good evening. Dear Mother, let us first open the casement and find out what time it is from Big Ben.
It's 12 o'clock.
Thank you, Ben. He is a big one, isn't he? Well, it's midnight again. Go to sleep, Mother. Any decent, respectable person is certainly in bed by this hour. I was telling the BBC man only last fortnight. Or was it fifthnight? No. Thirdnight. I was telling him that these late-at-night broadcasts are only to an audience of rumpus and thieves. Let's get on with it, shall we? I have a request here from the Duke and Duchess of Aylesbury, who are celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary. Amazing that they've been married 30 years. Don't know how this turns her. Looks a good deal like a wild pig, you know. Fact is, that's how he met her. His dogs cornered her in a hunt. Put an apple in her mouth and married her. Well, the Duke has requested a song which he wants dedicated to the Duchess, Rag Moth. Well, he wants it, he can have it.
M, I said M-O, M-O-P, M-O-P-P, mop, M-O-P-P, mop, mop, mop.
M-O-P-P, mop, idiot can't spell. That song, incidentally, was just sent over by America. We had to accept it. Came with the money, you know. You're terribly unkind. Next, I plan to play a new thing called
Don't cry, Joseph. Allow her to depart. Allow her to depart. Allow her to depart. And here it is, as played by Lord Philip, Earl of Spitalney. And featuring Sadie and her magic zipper. I like it. I really do. Those Americans. Right now, I'm required to play a recorded announcement. It's really a sales message. You needn't pay attention.
I'm Pamela the Kipper, and I'm here to say a lovely Kipper herring makes me feel so gay. You can put them in the icebox or the sink, by Jove. If you care to, you can even put them in the stove.
You can feed them to your horses. You can feed them to your cat. Hey! You can keep them in your kitchen. You can keep them in your hat.
Kipper should be eaten because the herring can't be put away for later.
If you should happen to forget this, call in the fumigator.
Indeed. Now, I have another request here from this telephone. Are you there? Yes? 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 Yes, I'm here. Eh? Oh! Hello. Yes. Now, for my next request, I have a wire here from the group at the George the Third Pub. It's from Cedric, Percival, Llewellyn, Reginald, and Fifi. I see no reason why I should grant their request. I don't know Cedric Percival well in original. Only met Fifi once. Does a rather amusing thing with two balloons. They want to hear that new American favorite. If I had known you were coming, I'd have prepared a crumpet. Poo to them. I shan't play it. The time is 12:45. Go home, Cedric, Percival, Llewellyn, and Reginald. And Fifi, let the air out of those balloons and go home, too. Now, I've been asked to play a song that I'm told all America is singing. I must go where the wild goose goes. Ah, these Americans. We should never have given them their independence. Can't possibly understand who cares a farthing where the wild goose goes, unless you happen to be a wild gander. Instead, I shall play the second movement of the third cantata of Rimsky-Korsakov's sixth sonata for piano, flute, and harpsichord. Quite good. Well, I'm sorry. Here's another advertisement, unfortunately. It's for the Essex Fox Hunt Club.
To horse!
Follow the hounds!
Yurik!
Hello!
Hello!
What time is tea?
Enjoy the grandest sport of England, the sport of noblemen. And at the end of an invigorating day, drive proudly home in your Rolls Royce with a foxtail dangling daintily from your radiator cap. Don't delay. Join the Essex Fox Hunt Club today. Free rub down to new members. And on a bright, clear morning, you too will call out, to horse!
Follow the hounds!
Yurik!
Hello!
I fell off.
That is halloo. Yes, the time is... Hurley, you're so Irish. The time is now 1:15. Every Briton will resent you, boy. This is a ridiculous hour to be listening to the wireless. Now, before I play our next recording, we have a guest here in the studio that I mean to chat with. I hope you don't mind. I say, Edward, will you usher in the guest?
Indeed I will, Googie. Meet Lord Cecil Bromley Billingsworth, Earl of Cheshire Heights of East Wessex, son of Sir Grosvenor Pillsbury Stettingham, and heir to Hollow Meadows on the Thames.
How'd you do, Googie?
How'd you do, Stinker? Stinker, I've asked you here... I've asked you here because you've just taken first prize at the annual South Weatherfield Garden Club exhibit in the nasturtium class.
Oh!
Good show.
Quite.
Yes. Now, perhaps you can tell us some of the fine points about nasturtium growing.
Quite. My wife and I have been growing and caring of nasturtiums our life work, you know.
I know.
We have no children, of course.
I know.
Hundreds of nasturtiums, though.
Good show.
They take a good deal of tending. Watering, pruning, fertilizing, so on. Good deal of work.
Of course.
They don't really appreciate it.
I know. But, Stinker, about growing nasturtiums.
Oh, yes. First off, you dig a hole in the ground.
Huh?
They grow out of the ground, you know.
Oh.
Most flowers do.
I didn't know that.
Not everyone does. But I've watched them. They do.
Stinker, now about the hole. How large should it be?
What hole?
Hole in the ground, of course.
Oh, quite. Not too large. Not too small, either. I'd say the hole should be just right.
Oh?
About the size of the seed.
Quite.
If you don't get the large seed, don't get the small one, either.
Yes, well, in any case, what size should the seed be?
The same size as the hole.
You know, I never knew that.
By the by, when planting nasturtiums, make sure you don't get the wrong kind of seed.
Well, what's the wrong kind of seed?
Well, carnation seed. You can't grow nasturtiums with carnation seed.
I never knew that.
You can't. I've tried.
Yeah. By the by, Stinker, how is Lady Barbara?
Lady Barbara?
Your wife.
Oh, her. Very dull. Always is. Always was. Always will be.
I know.
Married her for her money, you know.
I never knew that. Wonder, though. Cheerio, Stinker.
Cheerio, Boogie.
Very. Very, very remarkably interesting chap, that. Smells from nasturtiums, though. I have a request here. Sir Stafford Cripps, Minister of the British Treasury, wants to hear, "I've got plenty of nothing." I'll disregard that request. He's labor, you know. The time is now 1:45 a.m. Frankly, I'm bored. You fools listening at home, do anything you like. I'm going to bed. And now to sign off, we'll play a new recording of our own beloved Pomp and Circumstance by Sir Edward Elgar. Good night, Mother. Think a lad lived this. Morgan will be on the same corner in front of the cigar store again next week at this same time. Thank you very much and good night.
Show with Arnold Fang, Bert Kelton, Art Carney, the Billy Williams Quartet, and Milton Keynes Orchestra. Morgan himself will be back in this corner in front of the cigar store next week at the same time. The Henry Morgan Show is produced by Kenneth McGregor. This is Ed Hurley. Good night, everyone.
Programs. Get your programs here. Remember, Tuesday night is last night on the CBC's Trans-Canada Network, a trio of great comedy shows. And just half an hour from now, it's the Bob Hope Show with Doris Day's vocalist. Then, too, there's Kibitzer Jack Kirkwood, Irene Ryan, and Les Brown, and his band of renown. Fibber McGee and Molly come close on the heels. And after that, at 9:30, it's variety time from Vancouver with Ray McNest as MC and Ricky Hislop in the orchestra. The Henry Morgan Show came to Canadian listeners as an international exchange broadcast through NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. This is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.